Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Aaron O'Brien.
And Holly is away again. I miss you, Holly.
She's gone away to a galaxy far, far away.
They're trying to reattach her feet this week.
Yes. Good luck with that.
They got cut off the last time she was with us, and now they're trying to reattach them.
Yes.
Hopefully they won't be a centimeter off like Riker's penis or arm, whatever
no,
it was.
I hope they don't put like duck feet or anything like that.
Oh, man, she'd be Howard S. the Duck.
Yeah, that would be kind of...
Holly the Duck.
Yeah, or platypus feet.
I knew a guy with web feet in grade school.
He swam great.
He did swim great. He was the best swimmer. He's the best swimmer.
His name is Michael Phelps.
No.
Well, we chose this topic because we're glutton for punishment.
We're trying to drive our numbers down as far as possible.
The Star Trek...
animated series. No.
The Star Trek 2009 reboot, J.J. Abrams, that was a smash hit.
It was a smash hit. It did really well. It spawned two sequels and divided the Star Trek community. So we're
doing great.
We're doing great. But there was a little bit of news this week.
There's a little things going on, yeah.
Little thing. Like, they're talking about Michelle Yeoh getting her own Star Trek series.
Yeah.
As Emperor Georgiou. Yeah. Expanding what she does in season 2 of Discovery, so a Section 31 show. And I'm all down for a Section 31 show.
You've been dying for this forever.
I've been dying for this ever since I just discovered Section 31 was a thing. I don't like the idea of it being a Georgiou show. I think they're trying too hard to like sell the shows on singular characters instead of ideas.
Yes.
Because Discovery has been the Michael Burnham show.
Yes.
Michael
Burnham show. Her dad's a dick, and his brother doesn't talk to her. And Cybok smoking Vulcan nug.
And her mom reads to her multiple 100-year-old books and nothing recent in pop culture. She has no idea what Game of Thrones is or George R. R. Martin.
Yeah, Michelle Yeoh and... I mean, she was wonderful, and I know she's obviously coming back in season 2. I don't like her as the evil person. I liked her as the tutor.
Mm-hmm. I'm excited to see what they do with her in Section 31.
Yeah.
And to see how our ideals flip, and maybe she'll be more excited because she's got more freedom with Section 31. Maybe
right.
She'll be a more interesting character.
Right.
And maybe this won't be a bad idea, but I wish they would just say, hey, we're doing a Section 31 show, and she'll be one of the leads, maybe. Because Section 31 is an interesting idea, but it seems like they're doing so much to expand. I don't know if Lower Decks is going to be Discovery era. They have not said that specifically.
We don't know anything about it.
But
yeah.
I imagine it would be, and if they're doing this Michelle Yeoh spinoff, it'd also be Discovery era. That's a lot of stuff going on in Discovery era. Like, I wish they would kind of move forward. Let's see.
Yeah, we don't know. We don't know.
Maybe an era between the TOS show and the movies.
Yeah.
That's like a nice 10, 15-year gap.
I just don't think Michelle Yeoh, her character is so, diabolical and malicious. Why would I want to tune into this? Let's watch a whole movie. Let's do a whole series on Hitler. Oh, they're going to do Khan Noonien Singh. Apparently, that's one of the things that are in the works.
That's what Nicholas Meyer left Discovery to work on, a Khan series or a Khan short story.
It's an interesting concept. And it could
concept,
but it's not. It's not like endure. Like he's not like you. Like I want to know more about Khan. Khan's a dick. He's.
Oh, I guess we're done.
You know,
he forces redheads to give him blowjobs and
yeah, that's right.
And beats them, then makes them ask to stay on to get beaten some more,
and then gets killed when she decides to. You know, I don't know. It's all those things. It's like it's not really why we watch Star Trek.
No.
Star Trek is the eternal hope that the human race can rise above our differences and reach for the stars and explore and be better than who we are right now in this very moment in society and our culture. And I just don't see why we need to see that.
And since Discovery got shot down as a anthology show, mm-hmm. making a Section 31 show would be the perfect anthology show.
It could be a better one, for sure.
Because you could just see, like, they're dealing... Because you don't need a ton of Section 31. I mean, you could make a seven-season thing of Section 31 just during Discovery era, but that would be boring to me. I'd like to see how they've meddled with Star Trek through the years. Like, make him tie into different episodes.
Now
like,
you're just talking about your wet dream for Section 31.
Do something clever.
Yeah.
I mean, like, to me, that would be clever. Like showing what happens, like, what their behind the scenes were in some of the movies. Like you know, make him tie into existing canon and be like, and make them interesting. And make them, like, oh, without Section 31, like, stuff with Kirk would have failed or something like that.
Well, I've brought up the play before the movies, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. It's like the behind the scenes of what happens during Hamlet.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that would be great. Like, do that, but with Star Trek. And Section 31 would be a perfect thing for that.
I mean, they would, not Trouble with Tribbles, Tribbles and Tribulations.
Trials and Tribulations.
Yeah, I mean, that's another great way how they're kind of working behind the scenes, you know.
Yeah, but a whole show where things are working behind the scenes of what we know, that would be so much fun.
It would be fun.
There could be so much stuff they could do with that.
It would be fun.
But of course, they're trying to establish a new visual look for Star Trek, so they couldn't do that because that would ruin their newest visual aesthetic.
Wah, wah. Talking about jumping around, let's go 1,000 years into the future.
Oh my God. So... Star Trek number 2 has come out. The first one was perfectly acceptable. It was kind of fun and silly seeing Tilly being Tilly, and you know she's not hard in the eyes or anything.
Right.
And the guest star, she was kind of pretty too, even though she was a weird alien. Calypso, the guy has something against Betty Boop. Apparently wants Betty Boop for like 3 months inside his escape pod. Discovery finds him.
He's insane.
And yes, he's watched Betty Boop for 3 months while in critical condition in an escape pod. Her head is so big. But Discovery like tractor beams him in, somehow gets him to med bay, fixes him somehow. And it's just a computer. I don't understand how the Discovery is this automated. Stuff from the 24th century wasn't this automated. So how is Discovery so special? It's somehow alive 1,000 years in the future.
Yeah.
The ship's favorite movie is Funny Face with Audrey Hepburn.
Nice.
And it shows the movie to him. Mm-hmm. And she's like, this is my favorite movie. And then they watch it over and over again. And he learns how to do the dance. So because she... The computer does all these things for him. She teaches him what Taco Tuesday is and what waffles are and feeds him real good and takes care of him, makes him special clothes. And then he's like, oh, has anyone done anything nice for you? Hmm. And she's like, I don't even know what that would be. So he like watches the movie over and over again to learn how to do the special dance that happens between the main characters. And then he asks her to project herself as herself.
To dance.
So they can dance together. And then they almost kiss, and then he remembers that he has a wife and child, and he's like, I gotta take out the shuttlecraft, and I've gotta go find my way home.
I gotta go, babe. This dance has been nice. Thanks for feeding me and clothing me with these nice threads.
And then so they fall in love, but he's like, I've gotta do the right thing, go back to my wife. my physical wife and my son who's been growing up with me because he's some refugee from some war. Discovery crew were said to have left 1,000 years ago, and the ship was ordered to maintain its area where it is.
And is Discovery is sentient now?
Yeah, Discovery. It's had 1,000 years to figure out sentience, but it won't break its order. It's a friendly sentience. It's not like Dave from Space Odyssey.
I can't do that.
Or Hal.
Hal just died. Hey, the guy just died. Just,
oh,
I just
wow.
read that. Yeah, 90 years old. I forgot his name, but yeah.
Yeah, so it's not maliciously like Hal. It's a friendly, you know, feed you tacos and nurse you back to health computer. I don't know how it fixes them without an actual doctor there.
I don't know.
I don't know how the ship is still working 1,000 years in the future. It's absolutely fine. All the holograms work, and it, we don't learn anything about the crew of Discovery. Right. We just said the entire ship left, and we don't even get the name of the captain. So they didn't say, like, you know, Captain Burnham,
right?
You know, abandoned ship without everyone. Like, we don't know who the captain is. We don't know if it was the same crew. We don't learn anything.
Sure, sure.
And so basically, this is the Odyssey in space,
right.
Cut down to 15 minutes. And when I didn't know it was the Odyssey, I was reading about the people's reviews about it, and they were basically saying it's the Odyssey. I'm like, oh, okay. It doesn't make it any better to me that it's a short rendition of the Odyssey.
What does it do for Discovery or anything? Just that we know the Discovery survives as a ship?
I'm shrugging really, really hard. I know that it doesn't play over radio well, but I guess it survives. Is this canon? I don't know. Like, it does nothing. The trailer showing that it's 1,000 years in the future, that got me super excited. You know, like, what happened to Discovery? Because we've always theorized that Discovery's going to get lost somehow.
Lost in space, right.
And we don't know exactly where it is. And it's just...
He wasn't kicking over old bones at all.
No. He said the entire crew left. There's no other soul on board. Just the computer decided to get smart on its own somehow. Become sentient on its own. More sentient computer problems that Aaron always talks about.
Ships should be treated with sentient life rights.
Yeah, I mean, the ship
really comes down to
Discovery becomes sentient and had develops a personality and wants to please her man.
Right. Ah, oh, boy.
It was a love story in space between a man and a ship, and it was kind of weird. And I
think Kirk got that one going a long time ago.
He made love to a ship once?
Yeah, he loved the Enterprise so much.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
He kept on, I think it was Naked Time where he was
jerking off in the warp core.
Yeah.
Take my seat. Expand.
Take it. No, he was like, I'll never lose you. You know, whatever.
Petting it weird. Heavy petting on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
I just didn't care for it. I was expecting lore. Yeah. I wanted some lore, some Star Trek Discovery lore. I wanted to know, even if they said it was like a captain who we didn't know the name was. So we'd know Discovery's been handed down to somebody else.
Here's my thing.
So there's no clue if this will ever link into anything. It's just its own thing and it doesn't matter.
I don't think these writers have a fucking clue what they're doing. I really don't. I really, the further more we get along, you're like, they don't have a roadmap. Maybe they do, but I'm thinking they don't. I think let's get through the season and hopefully we all survive and we don't get fired or whatever.
According to Midnight's Edge, which I'm not super...
I know, we just had a discussion before we recorded how much he does not give it any credence.
I don't give it a lot of credit, but what they did say about the shorts was that they're basically using sets that weren't used. They just were shooting on empty sets because they're just trying to make a quick buck, mm-hmm. which kind of makes sense for these because they're shooting on the transporter room pad a bunch and the one with Tilly and one with him. They're shooting on an empty bridge mm-hmm. and like the rec room and like whatever. So like whenever they're off on location shooting somewhere real or on a different set, they're just like, oh, look, these aren't being used now. We'll just shoot here. So I mean, it kind of makes sense that, I think Midnight's Edge makes up a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And specifically to sow dissension among Star Trek fans or to, you know, add a lot of Discovery hate because they say, like, things that I've read contradicting reports to. So I'm not a huge fan of them.
I think they bring up some interesting points, but
they also make up stuff.
Well, see, that's the thing is you don't know if they do have sources or they don't. If they don't
They don't say they have sources, but they report things as if they are fact. Without citing
I've
sources.
I've heard them more than once saying, like, sources from within, blah, blah, blah. I've heard them say that. Doesn't mean they do.
Yeah, just because you say doesn't...
But newspapers do that all the time. Newspapers say we have sources within the White House. They say but they don't cite those sources because obviously they want to keep those people. So I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying that there is a possibility that they could have something. But I do think Discovery...
They're just some YouTube channel. Like, they probably don't.
They got a lot of views.
Maybe, but I mean...
A lot of views.
Yeah, because they're trolls. Well, people like feeding the trolls and seeing what the trolls have to say.
That might be true. But
And they also tag well. So, I mean, anything you take a look up Star Trek, you'll probably get them in your feed because Star Trek is tagged.
I know they do come up in my feed.
They come up in mine, too, and I don't search for
them. Whatever.
I don't ever search for them, but they come up. And I watch them here and there to see what they have to say.
Okay, but my whole point is I just don't think these people, these writers, have a freaking clue. And as we get into this 2009 reboot, I think we're going to learn still more that guys like Kurtzman, Orci, all these other people are...
I'm so scared for Star Trek, guys.
Yeah.
Rewatching this movie has made me so much more scared.
Star Trek's not perfect. Never has there ever been a series that's perfect. I mean, maybe TNG gets probably as close to the mark we can ever get. But there's still even problems in TNG. But, I mean, there is just too many issues with all these shows. And this Discovery, I'm hopeful, but I'm becoming less and less optimistic. I think I've discussed this before.
Yeah, last time when I just asked you about your thoughts on Discovery, because we were coming short on an episode. I was like, let's just talk about Discovery. What's our thoughts on it now as the new season's coming out? That was like five or six episodes
ago. Let's find out where it goes. I'm not going to sully it or just, you know, poop on it, but...
I'm worried.
I'm very worried. I think they really don't have a freaking clue.
And before we get into the episode, we should have talked about this in the news last time, but episode 200 is coming up.
Yes.
We want people to contribute like we did to episode 100. Instead of giving us your Star Trek stories or how you got into Star Trek or what got you into the Synthaholics, this time we want your crazy Star Trek theories, because we're going to do Trek Wars. And the thing is, it may not fall on exactly 200, because if Discovery happens before we get to 200, then it may get pushed back. Or we may like do like 199.23456 to get through Discovery or whatever, and then do this is 200, because last podcast and left did that because they were waiting to do a big episode.
I know.
So it'll be interesting to see when this falls and when Discovery comes out. I think it'll be after Discovery season 2, but we want to get everyone's thoughts, any crazy theories, because we want to do something in the style of InfoWars from Mr. Alex Jones. Not that we endorse him,
no,
or think he's a good person. We just think he's funny, because he's so off the wall and so ridiculous, and nothing makes sense that comes out of his mouth. And we think it'd be fun to do a show in the style of Alex Jones,
the
conspiracy theory.
Right.
And maybe have Holly do like a mock interview between Aaron and I as different sort of pseudo clones of Alex Jones.
Alex Jones, yeah.
The Borg are turning the frogs gay.
Well, so if you have any ideas, definitely email us at
synthaholics@yahoo.com. You can send us voice clips too if you want to have your own clips read over the air, or just played over the air. That would be fantastic too. We could, you know, listen to those and respond to them live. Mm-hmm. Or like, you know, oh, that's crazy. That's not even crazy enough for me today. You know, something, you know, we could, you know, do things with it. So we were looking for definitely some listener participation on this to make it kind of a special episode for episode 200.
Right.
Or whatever episode it happens to be. But that'll be our like anniversary episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, cool. So, yeah, send those in if you have any ideas. Even if you have like a twinkling of an idea, let's get into some of that and try to figure out what...
And specify what era you'd want it to be in, like Discovery, Next Gen, Voyager, whatever.
We can
place that too. You know, it, just if it's like a specific... You know.
Yeah, time period. Well, so, the JJ reboot, Star Trek.
Star Trek is the worst movie. The blanket reviews.
This was released on May 8th, 2009. Mm-hmm. As we mentioned, written by Roberto Orci and
Alex Kurtzman.
Alex Kurtzman, directed by J.J. Abrams. Movie did very well. Budget of $150 million, and box office drew in $385.7 million. So, still more than double.
Yeah.
So... that's good. So we start off, we have the Kelvin out in space.
And the opening shot, this is how Star Trek Discovery should have looked.
Yeah.
A clear views of the spaceships.
Right.
Because they got the angles, they got like some of the camera angles and shots done, but like just everything was so muddy in Discovery. And you know they had good shots, good models, because you do see them clear once in a while.
Sure, absolutely. So, yeah, the Kelvin sees a lightning storm near Klingon space, and they think this is a black hole. And a massive ship called the Narada emerges and opens fires on the Kelvin, and the Kelvin's no match for the Narada. And it beats it up enough, and then they cease fire, and they ask for the captain, to come aboard. And so he takes a shuttlecraft across. And he gives his lieutenant, second command, George Kirk.
Command.
Command. You're captain now, Kirk. What?
What?
George,
I didn't sign up for this.
Wait.
I was just scrubbing toilets yesterday.
The Captain Kirk, Captain Kirk's father, James Tiberius Kirk's father is George Kirk, if you didn't know this. And if you didn't know that, I don't know why you're listening to this podcast right now. His wife is pregnant with James Kirk and is about to give birth. And during the fight must have induced labor somehow.
Stress.
Stress does that. So as the captain goes across into the Narada, the giant tentacle ship, the Captain Nero is the...
So much hentai.
No.
The captain gets raped over and over and over again.
They ask, do you know what the ship is? And they shows an unknown ship. Do you know who Ambassador... Where
I'm not familiar with him.
With Ambassador Spock.
What's the date?
What's the star date?
What?
Where are you from? And then he realizes they're in the wrong time period. And
as soon as he tells them the date, he gets a spear through the chest.
Yeah.
That's what you get for being the bearer of good news.
Yeah, Nero throws a spear right through his chest. Then they realize that they're in trouble. Kirk orders a...
evacuation.
Yeah, the ship to abandon ship. And he's going to use autopilot to crash into the Narada. But then he realizes in the middle of the fight... taking on damage that the autopilot has been, broken, and he has to do it.
Can't you just punch into the computer to go to this coordinate? You have to do it anyway to go manually, so just doot, and then get on the escape pod. Maybe it'll miss, but...
Ship's rocking.
Yeah.
It's rocking.
Rocking.
So...
The ship's a mile long. You're going to hit part of it.
Somehow.
You're going to hit some of it. Something. Come on.
Well, so there's a discussion, obviously, about... with his wife as she's giving birth, as they're escaping, and he's protecting him too. That's the other thing I didn't notice until watching that he was actually shooting at off the missiles from the Narada, because some of the shuttles didn't make it.
Some of the shuttles got shot.
Yeah, they got shot down by the Narada's missiles or torpedoes, whatever they were. And they name his son James after his mother's dad. So,
and his middle name is his dad, Tiberius.
Tiberius. Yes. Tiberius is the worst.
It's the worst. Can't believe they have time. As fast as ships go in Star Trek, I can't believe they have the time for this huge, long dialogue. I mean, it's touching.
It is.
But it doesn't make a lot of sense.
And that was the one thing we were talking just before we started recording, is that something that really hit me when I was watching this was how artfully done is during the time where the ships, the Kelvin and the Narada are exchanging fire. There's explosions everywhere, but the sound has all been muted, and you just have this symphony of music playing over it, emoting the tragedy of what's about to happen, that George Kirk is going to die, that Kirk's never going to see his father, and it was really artfully done. Well done.
This opening is easily the best part of the entire film.
There's some good parts too.
I'm not saying there's not other good parts. I'm just saying this part is almost perfect.
Yeah.
It's a great opener. Yeah. It's got great action. It establishes this is what Star Trek could be on a big budget, with some great shots of the Kelvin. Someone getting blown out in the space and bouncing off the phaser pod.
Yeah.
It's so much about this scene is great. It's emotional with Kirk being born and the husband and wife never seeing each other again, him sacrificing his life. It's just so well done.
And then you have that great intro with the music and the big the Delta shows up.
The music and the visuals, it's perfect. Like, that opening is perfect, except for, like I said, like the one nitpick I have is I don't know if they have enough time to do all that dialogue while he's like driving into the ship.
Right. So then we see, as you probably know, is the Kelvin smashes in the Narada, and the ships take off, and that's where we leave them.
So what doesn't happen in the movie, I will explain, because it doesn't make sense.
I'm going to just tell the listeners here. What Dave's going to say helps, but it doesn't excuse the problems in this movie.
So the Narada is hit by the Kelvin. It is disabled. Klingons come. They kidnap everyone, presumably George Kirk, since they wanted him to be in Star Trek IV. Mm-hmm. Nero and his people are tortured on Narada for 25 years, and then they steal the ship back after they escape Rapente, and they sit and wait in the coordinates for Spock. They don't show any of this. They just show them waiting for Spock, but Nero's missing half of his ear.
And you said this is all in the comic books.
This is a deleted scene.
Oh, okay.
The comic book stuff is like is other stuff.
Okay.
Now going to the comics, the Narada was a mining Romulan ship. It was augmented with Borg technology, which is why it has all the black spikes and pointy things. And why the missiles had that green hue to them. Mm-hmm. And the jellyfish, the ship that Spock comes on, was actually built by Geordi. Red matter was harvested by the Romulans, but it had to be refined by the Vulcans. What else was there?
We talked in why the nacelles look different and why the old Constitution classes were retired. And we had a new Enterprise in the beginning of this movie.
Yes. So what happened was, I assume there's parts of the ships that were the Narada that was broken off, and maybe some Federation people came in and picked them up, and they studied them,
and they
augmented all the ships.
They reverse engineered Narada's technology,
which is Borg technology and Romulan technology, to make them different and bigger and more powerful. So that's why all the ships are different. There's actually a deleted scene from Star Trek in the Darkness from Admiral Marcus's office where they pan up, and you do see an original Star Trek Constitution class as a model. So they did exist in this universe, but through picking up that technology from the Narada and the scans they got from the shuttlecrafts of the Narada, they were able to reverse engineer some technology and make their ships bigger, better, more powerful.
So all this is...
between deleted scenes and the comics.
Yeah, it fills in a lot of gaps, and that's helpful, but it gives this movie a lot of issues, because as a longtime fan, you're like, well, that works out for this and that, but, you know, why would the Enterprise be new? Why wouldn't Pike be captain of the Enterprise? You know, and then, I mean, it makes sense more and more, but those details
are super important for making this movie make sense.
Yes.
And they aren't explained anywhere, because they're either deleted scenes from the first two JJ films or the comics that came out that led up to the movies. And this is important information. Like, I was at the movie theater. I remember at the movie theater, I was asking people if they read the comics. And they're like, no, there was comics. And I was explaining them to the story. And they were telling me that they wish that was the movie.
Yeah.
Instead of this, because that sounds way more interesting.
Well, we move on 10 years later. We're in the mid-2240s, and a young boy's racing
a Nokia car.
An old Corvette across Iowa, and he's blasting the Beastie Boys, of course.
The Bestiality Boys.
The Bestiality Boys.
Well, it makes sense, because Kirk sleeps with two cat ladies in the second movie.
So
also listening to Bestiality Boys.
Bestiality Boys. I can't stand it. I know you had a sex with a cat. He gets a call from his stepfather, and he's like, that's an antique car. Don't smash it up. But he ignores him. Like you said, Nokia.
Nokia is still going strong in the future. I don't think Nokia exists now.
Yeah, you know, it's really weird. It was a weird...
They had a comeback.
I mean, they had product placements. I mean, they also had, like, Uhura orders a Bud Light or a...
Budweiser Classic.
Or whatever like that. I'm like...
200-year-old Budweiser formula.
Yeah. So...
Next to Horse Face Man.
He gets...
The guy with a really long face.
Oh, yeah.
Walks into this, well, hey, why the long face? Well, I'm horse.
Yeah.
So, or whatever that alien's named.
So the police start chasing Kirk in this little, like, speeder bike, and Kirk decides he's going to just drive the Corvette off into a quarry, and he jumps off at the last minute. And
he would have died.
Oh, yeah.
But it's a real short movie.
But it's Kirk. So
he can't kill him.
He can't kill him.
Until the next movie, and then resurrect him immediately.
You know, and you introduce, you know, citizen, who are you? He says, my name is James
Tiberius Kirk. He's proud of that middle name.
It's a cool name.
It is kind of cool.
I got a bit. So then we jump over to Vulcan. We get a young Spock, and he's in his little fish bowl getting asked questions. And then these young Vulcans come, classmates, just to give him shit.
That doesn't seem very logical.
Yeah.
Like Vulcan bullies. It's just, why are Vulcans such assholes? Like
Vulcans are gigantic assholes.
I know, but how is that logical?
Enterprise pushed that to the to full, like, you guys are just dicks. That's
awesome. Yeah, but like Spock never came off as a dick. I mean, he was like, he was funny, or he didn't,
because he's half human. But then and we also find out that, well, so they're trying to elicit emotional response from Spock. And then they call his dad, Sarek, a traitor because he married a
human. And they call his mom a whore.
Yeah, and he flips out. He's very sensitive about his mom.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, don't call my mom nothing.
Well, he does some Vulcan martial arts and starts whooping that boy. So apparently he did study the martial arts very well.
Yeah, so he he beats the shit out of him and he has a little
moment. Gets attention with his dad.
Yeah, he talks to his dad and he said, you know, marrying his wife Amanda was the logical thing to do since he was the ambassador to Earth. So we see Spock is conflicted.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's a pretty good way to kind of show his upbringing in a encapsulated. I mean, it doesn't really ring true to Spock to me, but if you're going to introduce these characters to fresh eyes, that's a good way to do it.
I mean, it is an origin story after like Batman Begins or whatever, but for Star Trek, right. in a new universe, and it cuts to Spock being older.
Yeah, now we get Zachary Quinto as Spock,
and Winona Ryder, giggity.
Yeah,
she was underused in this movie.
She was, and I, you know, obviously she had a comeback with Stranger Things.
Strangest Things.
But I always like Winona Ryder, and she's pretty awesome. Anyways, so Spock is thinking about going to the Kolinar to purge himself of his
emotions.
And, you know, Manda's like, whatever you choose, I'm all right. You know, you choose your own path. I'm happy with you. So,
hey, where's Michael?
Cyborg, yo, dude!
Smoking some dog. I'm not even going to try. I went to the Kolinar, but I just smoked the entire time. You should try it too, man.
I flunked out of the Vulcan Science Academy.
If you go down behind the statue, there's the best artificial nug being grown back there. You should
check
try
out this space horse.
Space horse.
None of those things happen.
No, they would have made the movie better. Although this is one of my favorite scenes. This is another one of my favorite scenes in the movie. Still, like before anything important happens, mm-hmm. the best scenes are the beginning because he's got the Vulcan Science Academy and he makes the decision to go. And they like, oh, you're gonna pass even though you've got this issue.
He says, commends his accomplishment despite his disadvantages. And he says, what might those be? What's my disadvantage?
Your human mother, of course. And I love his live long and prosper is a fuck you.
It really
I love the way he says it.
That Vulcans are fucking racist. They are like just a bunch of racists. You know, oh, you have a human mother? You're like, oh, you're...
poor soul. Yeah. But his live long and prosper is a total fuck you. And I love the line delivery that Quinto does here. Like that's one of my favorite lines in the movie.
Yeah. Quinto did pretty good. Quinto,
he makes something that's so nice and like a fuck you. It's great.
No, but he plays Spock far more emotional than Nimoy did.
I think he had to because of the type of role it was. But it also in that scene when he sang it, he looks like just like Nimoy.
Well, he does.
He looks like him, but in that scene is the most Nimoy he looks, I think.
I think, and this is my opinion, I wish we had Holly. I think Quinto is a more attractive man than Nimoy. I think he looks...
He's more of a pretty boy than Leonard Nimoy was. But in that one scene, was so close.
Yeah, no, but my point only being is, but I don't think you could get a better actor to really embody.
I guess we'll find out in Discovery Season 2 how that new guy is. I don't know.
Right,
but
right.
I really wish they'd gotten Quinto because Quinto's delivery on the lines is so good.
Yeah, he does.
And he got tutelage under Nimoy himself.
Yeah.
No one is more qualified to play Spock than Quinto.
Absolutely. Now we jump to a bar in Iowa where a young Academy cadet, Uhura, meets up with James T. Kirk at the bar. Now, Kirk is not in the Academy. He's just a Iowa
lowlife
scrub, just hanging out at the bar, trying to hit on
genius level repeat offender.
And he, when he starts hitting on her, he gets one of her Academy friends,
mates,
I don't know, says, is this guy bothering you? And she kind of makes a joke, you know,
I can handle him,
but then he says, it turns into a fight. Mm-hmm. And Kirk gets his ass whooped. Although he does pretty good against the four or five guys.
Yeah, and he's a pretty bold, like, get four or five more guys, then it'll be a fair fight.
Right.
He does, like, he encourages them, and he allows himself to get sucker punched, which he's, like, picking a fight, but then he's, like, not going to start it either.
Yeah.
He's, like, picking it with words, but he waits for them to throw the first fist.
So obviously...
not a brilliant tactician yet.
No. But might be just looking for... I think Kirk is looking for something bigger than himself, and that's the reason why we see him. He gets himself into things, like he crashes the car, he does this. He's reckless because he needs something to focus his energies on, and he is reckless without it, you know?
Yeah.
So during the fight, Kirk is getting his ass kicked, and Pike shows up, and he tells him to knock it off, and Captain Pike just hangs out. And
you can whistle really loud.
You can whistle really loud. Pike realizes later on that Kirk is George Kirk's son. Looks up and he says, you know, like, your aptitude tests are off the charts. Why are you not in Starfleet? Your dad did all these great things. He saved, you know, he saved 800 lives or whatever he said.
He was captain for 7 minutes. I dare you to do better. Yeah. And that's all it takes. Just dare Kirk to do something and he'll do it. It's like, I'll do it in 3 instead of 4 years.
And, So then we see Kirk the next day.
So I guess that cycle. I guess that means they weren't, like, Uhura and all those guys were first years. So if it takes 4 years for everyone, he does it in 3. So he just, like, catches up to everybody.
I suppose, yeah.
I mean, that's the only thing that makes sense if he says he's going to do it in 3. Because that means Uhura and Cupcake would have had to do it in 3, too.
Time-wise, a lot of this stuff doesn't totally make sense because... Yes, maybe Kirk didn't join. I mean, well, Spock's a commander.
Well, right? Spock's a commander and has designed the Kobayashi Maru test before Kirk even goes to school.
Because if you think about it, Kirk, during time when Spock was... I don't know. Was he commander in the cage? I don't think he was because he had number one. So he probably was a lieutenant at that time.
Probably.
But, like, Chekhov would be far too young.
Well, he's 17 in the movie. They did de-age him.
They did de-age him, but he shouldn't be through the academy yet.
Well, he could have started the academy at 12. Like you said, he's a Russian prodigy. I mean, they have like 12-year-olds in college, right? So, I mean, like, you know.
Doogie Howser's kind of thing.
Yeah, sort of like that.
Yeah, okay.
12-year-olds teach in college because they're so smart.
Let me tell you about life.
Let me tell you about the quadratic formula.
So Kirk takes his motorcycle. He kind of has a come-to-Jesus moment, looking at the Enterprise being built. Like, yeah, I could do this.
I could do that.
And he decides...
Jack off into those nacelles. They're so big.
Those are bigger than I thought. So
Teddy fucking him.
He shows up to the where the cadets are all leaving, and
he gives his motorcycle to the first person who compliments it.
That's a nice bike, man. It's yours. Thanks.
Check the back of pocket's got some nug in it.
It's got some nug, some Vulcan nug. Got from a guy named Cybok.
He came in on a space horse, man. It was so rad.
You're so cool.
The space horse is never going away.
No. So as he goes in, he sees Cupcake, the guy he got in the fight with, all those guys from the bar, and then Uhura sees him and kind of says hi to her, and she's like, oh, God, not that guy. Not that douchebag.
And then he meets McCoy. And McCoy's going to threaten to barf on him.
I might throw up all over you. And he... he's talking about all the stuff that could go wrong in space. He says, I got news for you. You know, Starfleet
operates in space.
He goes, I know. There's just nothing left of me here.
My wife took everything in the divorce. All I got left is my bones. My boners.
So.
All I got left is my boners.
My boners. So, we get... You gonna be all right?
Nope.
All right. So, 3 years later...
I'm fine. That's funny.
3 years later, the Narada is waiting in unknown space, and that's when Spock shows up in his spinny ship.
Geordi makes the most annoying sounding ship ever. it's like Zoidberg.
Well, it's the Three Stooges.
Oh yeah, Three Stooges.
It's Curly.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, he makes the Curly noise.
But it's cute when Curly does it, and it's funny.
I guess. A little bit.
I love Curly. He's my favorite. Three Stooge.
So, they capture Spock. And next we are back at Starfleet, Starfleet Academy.
Kirk is sleeping with a green chick.
Kirk is going to take the Kobayashi Maru for a third time. McCoy thinks he's crazy. Of course he is. And then he's got to study. And like you said, he's sleeping with the green chick. Now, I just got to say, with technology today, it's obviously that the green stuff is painted on her. Mm-hmm. And it just doesn't look very realistic. I mean, it's pretty good body paint, but with CGI, couldn't you have, like, enhanced it a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, he does a lot of practical stuff in this movie, hence the beer refinery scenes where they're running through the beer room, and not over-reliance on CGI, which, I mean, I guess is sort of commendable, but it's also sort of lazy, like, not designing sets for the ship.
Right, or very little.
So, also a deleted scene, which is super important. The green chick he's sleeping with is the person who helps him sabotage the Kobayashi Maru.
No, that's interesting.
She installs the virus for him.
So Kirk isn't half the genius that he portrayed him to be. So he utilizes people.
Yes. All right. So in the deleted scene, like, I guess he gives her the code, the virus. So I guess he designed it himself, and he just has her implanted during the test, because which is why the test goes and then it comes back up.
Yeah, no.
It's when she installs his algorithm.
Right.
So I guess he's smart. He just got her to do it for him.
Is that smart or just?
But how do you cheat the test when you're in it without help?
Obviously, like I said, I just assumed he had like they said a subroutine, and it just kicked down at a certain point of the game or the simulation.
Yeah.
While he's in there with the Orion cadet, the Uhura walks in. That's her roommate. And she talks about how she received a Klingon transmission about 47 battle cruisers being destroyed near a prison planet. And then she hears Kirk, and he goes, "Oh, that's really interesting about that transmission." She kicks him out.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess if you know Star Trek well enough, you could have put together that they escaped from Repente, but it's such a throwaway line. You don't even think about it.
Honestly, before you even mentioned it, I wouldn't even know.
Yeah.
I really would have known. Next day, Kirk, Uhura, McCoy, and the other crew members are there at the Kobayashi Maru. Kirk is doing his third attempt, and he's very, like, whatever, man.
Nonchalant.
Yeah. And
he only had a nug he was smoking along with an apple he was eating.
He's made an apple bong.
Yeah, apple bong. Oh, that'd be crazy.
He's kicked out of Starfleet. It's
medical, man.
It's medical, man. It's for my bum leg.
It's the pain I feel because my dad died.
So Kirk, like you said, he sets up this program, the subroutine for the Kobayashi Maru. He's easily destroys the Klingon ships with his, torpedoes, what he fires at them. And
infinite damage torpedoes.
And then he just, they capture the crew, and he's like, how the hell did you do that?
And Spock's like, I don't know.
I do not know. And then all of a sudden, he's pulled into an inquiry in front of everyone.
The entire school.
Like, what? Like, wouldn't you just be in front of, like, maybe, like, the school administrators?
And Spock.
And Spock and a couple other people. But, like, what is, like, let's, like, publicly spank everybody in front of everyone. Like, pull your pants down, Kirk.
Mm. Why do you have green paint on your ass? And your dick.
I can't answer that. I have to plead the fifth. So during the inquiry, he gets this whole thing, like, he doesn't believe in a no-win scenario, and Spock's like, someday you might find that no-win scenario, and, they have this kind of debate.
It doesn't make a lot of sense. Like, I don't understand. I don't like Spock's...
I see both sides of it.
I don't like Spock's rationale. You're supposed to experience fear. I'm like, it's a simulation. I'm never going to feel fear from a simulation. Although, the Kobayashi Maru, if this is around, why are people in Discovery so unprepared to deal with battle?
I don't know. Maybe Spock didn't make it up yet.
Maybe. I don't know.
Well, no, it would have, because Kirk would have been on the Farragut.
Yeah, it should have been. Yeah, Kirk's on the Farragut in Discovery Time, so it should have been made if Spock actually made the Kobayashi Maru in the regular timeline. I don't know. I don't know if there's anything that substantiates that.
It's all very frustrating, to tell you the truth. Well, during this hearing, we get the everyone gets called away. Because they need all the cadets to man the ships.
Vulcan's in trouble. Send the cadets.
Send the cadets. Send the B squad.
Send the bestiality boys. It'll be fine.
Yeah, apparently the rest of fleets are at another location.
The Laurentian system, which is why the Enterprise is the only ship ever around. All the other ships are in the Laurentian system. Or it's Tuesday.
Well, the Farragut was there, too.
Yes.
Because Uhura was going to be
placed on the Farragut. Otherwise, she would have died.
I'm on the Enterprise. No, I'm on the Enterprise.
I'm on the Enterprise. And she's like, you told me I was good at oral sex. So, oral sensitivity. The same thing, right?
So, yeah. So, we have a whole scene where the cadets are all assigned their ships. Kirk is not assigned a ship because he's on academic probation.
For cheating.
For cheating. Which, they never even came to that
conclusion. They came to a ruling. They get interrupted.
Anyways, so they all take off, and then McCoy feels bad and comes back for him and says, look, I'll help you.
He gives him some, like Andorian crabs or something.
Andorian crabs. He shoots him up with some kind of virus, gets him sick, and then he says, look, he's sick. And he's like, I'm his physician, and I have to stay behind to take care of him, or I could come with on the ship. So the guy says, fine, Kirk, you can come on. So he gets on the transport to go to the Enterprise, and we get the first scene of the Enterprise, really, as they fly.
And it's hideous.
It's hideous. Hex, sonnies, we're here to take our space. I'm the Enterprise. Look at my ample nacelles.
You want to titty fuck those ample nacelles?
Oh, that's the grossest ship I've ever seen.
It's just the nacelles are way too big.
I couldn't agree more.
And after seeing a reimagined Enterprise done right in Discovery,
that's
like a perfect blending between old and like TNG, I mean not TNG, but TOS movie style and like modern effects.
Yeah.
It's like the perfect blending, except the neck's a little short, but like whatever. It doesn't have the torpedo launcher on the neck, so it could be short because it doesn't have
the torpedo. The original concept didn't have torpedoes.
Exactly, but I just feel like it's lower because the torpedo deck isn't there. So, I mean, it kind of makes sense. I mean, it doesn't fit in perfectly with canon, but this is a more well-imagined ship than the Kelvin Enterprise.
These nacelles are just too darn big.
You know, there's a point in a woman where the boobs are too big. Same thing on Enterprise. The nacelles are too big. That's just too big. Discovery nacelles are long.
That's just too big. There's not much I can do with that.
But they're not girthy.
No. No, I don't. Anyways.
But too much girth in the Discovery nacelles.
Yeah, so.
It's like big black dick. I don't know what you can do with it. It's not going to fit.
Somebody likes it.
Aaron, you have something to tell us?
Man, my black dick is great.
Oh, man, that's good. You lost yours in the surgery. You got a black one attached.
I lost it when I became Irish.
Oh, that's great.
God says, nope, that is not him. Anyways.
He'll be too drunk to use it anyway.
Yeah,
they don't need it.
You'd be too drunk to use it anyways, lad. You're better off. You stick it in a knotty hole in a tree, you'll be fine.
Oh, God.
A squirrel will nibble on it.
Oh.
So.
Stick it in a woodpecker hole.
Woody Woodpecker.
Yes.
I never put that together. Woody Woodpecker in the cartoon. He's actually a sexual reference.
He is.
Anyway.
Sexual reference, cartoon references, and Synthaholics. There you're welcome.
So they're all ready to take off. McCoy gives Kirk some kind of sedatives, gives him antibodies to get him better. So the whole fleet takes off, and Sulu can't seem to figure out how the warp engines work. So good job, Sulu.
Inertial dampeners are on, whatever that
means. I guess he had to have an introduction with Sulu. But it was kind of like...
Kind of dumb.
Yeah, come on. It's Sulu, man.
You're a pilot, aren't you?
It's like... It's Sulu's like... If you give Sulu anything, you know he's got to be a good pilot. You know? He does prove himself later, but I mean... It's a little... It's a funny joke.
Well, I do like, because I like how we just watched Cat's Paw not long ago, mm-hmm. because we do see Sulu do some like martial arts, and they got a choreographer, and they taught John Cho how to do some martial, or they got a stuntman or whatever. But it looks like he can actually do martial arts, which is kind of cool.
Right.
Versus like Sulu's, like, I mean, George Takei's really sad attempts of trying to do karate because he's Asian, or them telling him to do it because he's Asian.
You do that. No, I don't really know. Do it! All right!
Oh, my.
So,
are you going to make me?
Oh, my. So, we get... So, the whole fleet takes off. The Enterprise is a little bit late. Not by much. Like...
Seconds? Minutes?
Yeah, maybe 2 minutes, 3 minutes at most. So, they take off into warp, and they're heading to a Vulcan. Chekhov makes a...
Chirp off. One of my other favorite lines. Chirp off, check off.
He makes a ship-wide announcement. The worst. Why wasn't the captain make the announcement?
Why are you making the guy with a speech impediment do the...
It's like, we don't understand a word he just said.
The computer didn't understand what he was saying, because he said, Victor, too.
Victor. So Chekhov makes the announcement that there's lightning storm that was seen.
Pike is lazy.
And I'm going to be in the ready room taking a nap. Let me know when we get to Vulcan. Let's get this bullshit over. And when Kirk hears the lightning storm part, he wakes up out of his sedative.
He has all these side effects. They can't talk to her, right? And
well, he makes the connection that this is the time when his dad
died.
So he's like, this got to be the same thing. This is the only time we've ever seen it. So Uhura confirms that she heard about the Klingons being destroyed, the 47 ships or whatever it was, and he runs up to the bridge. And what is funny thing is, like, Pike goes, Kirk, what the hell are you doing on the ship? It's like, why would Pike know if Kirk's on the roster or not? You know, he's kind of, I mean, that the Enterprise is larger than the old Enterprise. It's not, you know... It's got to have over 1,000 people on that ship.
Oh, probably, yeah.
It's a huge ship. Like, why would he know?
Well, he probably just heard he was grounded because of the academic probation. Not necessarily the.
Remember, they all left super manifest. Quick, too, but.
I guess, but I don't know. It's plot. This movie's all full of lots of little plot holes.
I know. I just was like, why do you know that? I understand if Spock knew it, but.
Maybe Spock told him. Who knows?
But anyway, so. Kirk gives his theory, and Spock even says,
"Logic is sound."
Logic sound, it could be. And so when they get out of warp, he's proved right. The fleet's destroyed.
How did the Kelvin last 30 minutes against Narada, but the fleet couldn't last 5 seconds? Makes zero sense.
I don't know. And they're being blocked. The drill that's shooting into Vulcan is blocking transporting... transporters and
all communications. Yeah. It made me think of the Phantom Menace when they're like, "Oh, must be preparing for war because we lost our transmissions." The old guy talking to Natalie Portman, like that scene just made me think of that. Like, oh, he's taking his thing out of Star Wars. But why? Why does I don't doubt that the Narada, the giant ship that it is, the Borg technology has the ability to block transporters and communication. I mean, I could see that, a big ship being able to do that. But why is it centered in the drill? It makes zero sense. None. It's a drill. Its purpose is to drill. It's not the communications blocker. It's not the transporter blocker. It is a drill.
I get it.
And the drill is lowered down, like, miles and miles of cable.
Yeah.
To the atmosphere. Yeah. Doesn't Vulcan have, like, surface-to-air phasers, surface-to-air torpedoes,
anything.
Shuttlecraft, transporters to beam?
A fleet.
Oh, you know, a fleet. I mean, of course they've got a fleet, but they're also in the Laurentian system. But don't they have a shuttlecraft or a torpedo hanging around that can just beam up there
and just
explode it?
They ever say why the other fleet's all the way over there?
No, they just say it's in the
Laurentian
system. No,
I mean, in any of the background scenes or any of the comics or anything like that?
No.
Well, anyways, the Enterprise is closing in on the Narada. When the Narada, Nero sees the ship and he sees the Enterprise, and then he makes a call and he introduces himself. And
which is a kind of funny scene. Hi, I'm Nero. Like, he's hi.
Hello, Christopher. I'm Nero. I'm like, hey, dude.
Hey.
Hey, what's going on?
I just destroyed your fleet. It's cool.
You know what? What's his name? Eric Bana.
Eric Bana.
Because he was in the first Hulk before the Marvel Universe thing took off.
Mm-hmm.
He was it, And I never liked him.
I kind of like Eric Bana in this.
I don't.
I thought it was a weird take for them to use.
Yeah.
Hi, Nero. Like, it's almost like it was like a
hi, I'm Nero.
Weird directing on the scene or whatever. Why that it feels like it was a bad take, so, and casual, they left it in.
Yeah, so casual. And then he addresses Spock, and Spock's like, I don't think we know each other.
Not yet.
Yeah.
We will.
And but he singles out Spock, obviously, so he realizes, obviously, Nero's smart. He knows this is early Spock before.
Oh, in the comics, he like got to read all the database things like Khan did. He was like, he was hanging out with Spock, and he got to read up on Spock and his past and whatnot. Gotcha.
Right. Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. That's why he's got such a hard on for Spock of the Enterprise, because he knows about it, because he read about it in the computer systems.
Sure, absolutely. So he has Pike transfer over to try to work something out, and they're like, there's no reason to go over there.
He's just going to kill you.
Yeah. He's like, I got to do it.
I'm
like,
oh, I didn't give the shipwide announcement, so I guess I got to do this. Kirk, you're second in command. Spock, you're the captain. Sulu and Redshirt, come with me. And Kirk, come with me. You're not supposed to be here. You guys are going to jump off into the drill and shoot it with your handheld phasers.
You know, I know that Pike is in Kirk's corner, obviously. But I do find it a little like... stupid that he would make him second command. You know?
Well, apparently Spock doesn't even listen to that order because he abandons him on...
I know, but...
It just doesn't make any sense. Like, Spock should have been, like, court-martialed for that.
Yeah.
Like, they said he was kicked off from mutiny. He didn't mutiny. He was just, like, arguing with him.
He wasn't arguing. I mean, he was arguing. I wouldn't call it mutiny, but he was being insubordinate.
Yeah, but that's not...
I find it strange that he would have kicked him off, though.
There's this thing called the brig, but we didn't build a brig set, so we're going to shoot him off into a planet that Spock happens to be on, because plot convenience.
But Khan could be in there.
But Khan could be there, but also Scotty and Keenzer, his figment of his imagination. I still think that's my headcanon. Like, someone else had some acidic blood or something. I'm like, yeah.
Yes, so... So anyways, Kirk and Sulu and Engineer Olson... he says his engineer. Should we fix the ship because we just got walloped? No, you jump out.
No, you jump. I just like how he calls for people with advanced hand-to-hand combat. Kirk asks Sulu what he's got, and he says fencing. What does Kirk have? Bar fight? Like,
I would say Kirk probably knows how to fight.
No, but like, Kirk's specialty is bar fight. Like, that's not even an actual, like...
That's a skill set. Like in D&D, he's like brawling.
Yeah, he's a brawler.
He's not really good at actually like martial arts.
That's not a specialty. Where Sulu should have said, "I'm a martial artist," or like they said fencing because he had the fencing sword in the movie.
But can we talk about Olsen for a second? How crazy he seemed. He's like, yep, I got those charges.
He seemed like Malcolm from Enterprise.
He seemed a little insane. No, Malcolm's reserved. This guy seemed like he was like, I'm ready to blow shit up.
But he seemed like Malcolm if Malcolm was like high on shrooms or something like
that. He was out of his mind. Like he
smoking that horse nug, that space horse nug.
I think I would chill him out. I think he's doing like, I think he's
speed
amphetamines or something like that. He's like, yeah, let's do this shit.
Vulcan meth.
He's doing
some green meth.
He's doing some like cocaine or something. Anyways, turn into a raging asshole. So they do this skydive. The skydive thing, I think it was clever.
It's kind of neat.
It's very first time we've ever seen anything like this in Star Trek. Obviously, they do it again in Into Darkness. I mean, not the same, but they got the...
It's a similar vibe, yeah.
Vibe to it, but it was really really creative for the time. I thought so. You know, like,
it was neat.
We never saw anything like that before. So, yeah, so they all go jumping off while Pike... flies over to the Narada.
Also, why couldn't the Enterprise shoot a torpedo guided and hit the thing? Like, there's so many things that could have taken out the drill. Why did they need to send people down there? So they could have a skydiving scene. That's why.
True. Good point. So
or beam a torpedo to it.
Olsen does not make it. He doesn't want to deploy his chute.
He pulls his chute, like, at 200 feet or 200 meters or whatever, which is stupid.
Like, they were, like, at 1,000 or 2,000 meters. They were, like, shoot, pull their chutes. And they're, like, he's, like, ah, and then he gets pulled under into...
Well, his chute gets caught in, like, the in the different things. And he gets swung into the drill, just vaporized.
And...
at least he didn't suffer.
And...
he was dead before he knew it.
And Kirk lands. He has some difficulties, but he lands. And Sulu almost gets vaporized by the drill, but he pulls himself back into. So
he uses a chute to pull him up.
And then they have a brawl with two Romulan drillers, miners.
I guess, yeah. They're all miners.
Dagnabbit!
They're like 3 or 4 years old.
So first they mine... Rurapente.
Miners, not miners.
I'm only 4 years old.
They're Kess.
Captain Kirk, don't kick my ass.
Please don't hurt us. Well, they were miners for Romulans, and they were miners in Rurapente. Now they're miners on Vulcan. They just mine everywhere they go.
Their mining skills are through the roof.
Like their D&D skills, like they don't have to roll. Their mining skills
just found
is like
gems.
Yeah,
just gems just laying around your feet. So they're
like, Olsen had the explosives. What are we gonna do? We'll let you shoot a couple phasers at it.
Yeah,
that did it.
Yeah. And
then, again, surface air phasers. Doesn't Vulcan have a shuttlecraft?
And then they start falling, of course.
Kirk, Sulu falls. Kirk jumps to try to save him.
Deploys a chute. Does not hold.
It's not a tandem chute.
Does not hold them.
It's not tandem. It's only built for one.
Do you have that on expert opinion right there?
Yeah.
Okay. So they're falling, and this is where Chekhov beams them up.
Right before they hit the ground.
I think they would have died. The way how long he took him to run down to the transporter room.
Oh, yeah, they would have hit.
Yeah, I thought that was a little ridiculous.
It took him a long time to get to the transporter room.
It was a funny scene.
It's a fun scene. It's like action. You get your heart pumping a little bit. But, like, they weren't that far up, I don't think.
Even if they were that far up, I mean, and, like, whatever. It doesn't matter.
It takes, like, 2 or 3 minutes to free fall. Ooh, yeah.
Right. Pike's on the Narada, and he basically just is subdued and... I mean, there's not much to say. Pike kind of gets decommissioned for most of the movie. So during that time, Nero, they find out his drill was destroyed.
But they already reached the core, so it doesn't matter.
And he just deploys
the red matter. The dumbest, boringest name for a doomsday thing.
The red matter.
The black hole maker. I mean, the black hole maker sounds pretty dumb too, but at least it's descriptive of what it does.
I know, like, what the hell?
Red matter is just like, oh, it's red.
The red matter. Never described what it actually is. Is it antimatter? We don't know what it is.
It's the cum matter.
Yeah. Anyways, so the red matter is deployed into the core of Vulcan. Red
Sorry, I just thought that was really good. It's red matter.
And Vulcan is being destroyed by the red matter.
It makes a singularity at the heart of Vulcan, and now that the thing is destroyed, they can beam. Spock goes down and beams to save his mommy and his pappy.
And the Vulcan elders that hold
knowledge. Because they just stay in this dark cave instead of like in a building where it's easy to transport them from. Plot convenience for killing Spock's mom. The scene is awful because the shot they run out, Winona Ryder is leaning on Zachary Quinto.
Yeah.
And the next time you see him, she's like 6 steps in front of him for no reason at all.
Right.
Like in that scene, if your planet's falling apart, you're not going to like spread out.
Right.
Things are falling. You're going to just hang on to him. He's your son. You feel safe with him. Like there was no reason for her to be all of a sudden 6 steps ahead to fall off. That was bad shot. Like they should have figured out something else to do with her.
Well,
like, or maybe she falls like right next to him before and he almost falls and they can't. But I mean, the fact that she's so far away makes no sense from a narrative standpoint. Like, why would you leave the safety of your son's embrace or your husband's embrace, who's also 6 feet behind you? Like, why didn't she run back to him? Like, she ran forward? That makes zero sense. You're running toward the danger because this one shot they're holding each other, and the next shot she's by herself.
Honestly, that didn't bother me as much. That
That's sloppy.
They couldn't beam her up, but they could beam Kirk,
following a terminal velocity. She hadn't even started to get terminal velocity
she
just yet.
She maybe dropped like 4 feet at most.
Yeah, it's just
it's so dumb.
It's dumb, but I mean, she shouldn't have fallen in the first place. She would have been like in real life, she would have been holding on to him for dear life.
Well, whatever the case is, I just think that was obviously plot convenience to kill his mom to make
so Spock's
more unhinged.
Yeah, well, Spock Kirk lost his dad, so Spock owes his mom.
We don't have our parents anymore.
So that way they can become, they can swap parents.
They can get married.
Yeah,
they
can like be Sarah, yeah, they could be brothers.
Oh, that should have been Star Trek 4.
Yes.
Forget George. Oh, wait. But George Kirk would come back and he's all angry.
He's angry that Sarek has married his wife.
Stop sleeping with my wife. I've been repentant.
Be your mother lover. You could.
I've been sleeping with Mardia.
It's the Parent Trap. It's Star Trek Parent Trap.
Yes. Yeah, so...
with Lindsay Lohan. Lindsay Lohan should be in Star Trek 4, so they could do the Parent Trap.
So, now... So Vulcan is destroyed, and the Narada takes off into wherever.
It's the sunset.
Yes.
They finished their mission. Spock's...
Spock's crying.
Dun, 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 dun. Oh wait, that's the wrong music.
So Spock is the acting captain. Kirk is second command, which nobody believes. And Spock basically says there were 6 billion inhabitants on the planet, and now there's maybe 10,000 at most.
I'm gonna put myself on the endangered species list. And we have to break up. I have to start boning Vulcans. I don't think they're going to like a quarter Vulcans.
Yeah, exactly. Uhura comes to comfort him. We got a hint, obviously, when Uhura says, I'm not on the Farragut. I should be on the Enterprise. But this is the first
time. Her oral expertise.
This is the first time we get, like, oh,
they're making out.
Spock and Uhura are a thing.
A thing.
And that was shocking to me, honestly, when I first saw this movie.
She leaves him for Scotty.
In Star Trek 5.
The sexy potato chip time.
What did you think about that when you first saw it? Do you not even care?
Didn't care.
I just don't
understand. I feel like it was in the preview. I feel like I knew. I feel like it was a known quantity.
I don't think I saw that. I think I don't know. I can't remember. But I remember being like, Spock with Uhura. Okay. I'm not saying it couldn't happen, but it seems very improbable.
I think they did it to make her more important. I think they wanted the female character to be more important in the thing, because Bones was always the third most important character. Bones gets marginalized in this a lot, and then and she becomes the third most important character.
And Into Darkness, Bones is barely in it.
Yeah. Which was great about Beyond, because Beyond, we got a bunch of Bones, because Bones was with Spock.
Yeah. So she tries to comfort him. Back on the Narada, Nero is asking Pike for the security codes to get into Earth. Like, Pike would know that just off the top of his head. And he says, I won't do that. Then he gives him the SETI eel.
It looks like a SETI eel, but it does work different things.
And
well, it's similar things. It goes into your mouth instead of your ear.
He said SETI eel.
He did say SETI eel? He
said SETI eel.
But SETI eels go in your...
Dave.
Ears.
Dave. It's fucking Kurtzman.
Oh, okay.
And he goes into... Actually, this is the first time Nero kind of goes into the whole backstory of what happened. <It's> so stupid.
Except he doesn't explain where Rad Natter comes from.
Anyways... Yeah, they don't really get into it, but they get.
My wife died. I'm going to kill everyone because my wife died.
My wife died. My wife was pregnant or had a kid. I can't remember. No, it's been 25 years.
Both. She's sleeping with my neighbor now.
So we get that scene, and then we jump back to the Enterprise. Spock is saying that the Narada must be coming from the future, and that this is an alternate timeline. He wants to to meet back with the fleet and to the regroup. And Spock's like, they're heading to Earth. I mean,
Kirk's like, they're heading to Earth. Yeah, we got to go stop them before things get out of hand.
Spock and Kirk just do not agree.
They butt heads, and then...
And then he says, call security, get him off the bridge. And then he starts attacking the security guards. And
Spock neck pinches him.
Gives him the Vulcan neck pinch, and then he says, get him off the ship. And he ejects Kirk off the ship. It's pretty severe.
Yeah.
Maybe he realized that Kirk is like an unknown quantity that he can't deal with, so he's just like, get him off the ship.
It's just such a weird decision. It makes no sense. He's defying Captain Pike's orders wholeheartedly, not taking his advice the way Captain Pike, like just work with him.
Yeah.
Like but it's just plot convenience, getting him off so he can meet Spock Sr.
Sure.
On Delta Vega, and so they can meet Scotty, because it's like an hour and 36 minutes in the movie before we even see Scotty.
I know, right. Moving forward, Kirk is
chased by a couple animals.
He's down on Delta Vega, this ice planet, and he gets basically an ice Hoth planet. He runs from...
two different animals.
And where Spock, Nimoy Spock from Prime Universe, saves him and is like...
With fire.
And goes, James Kirk.
Old friend.
And he does a Vulcan mind meld, and he kind of goes...
We get more backstory.
We get more backstory.
But still not enough.
Right. We find out that that Spock was being ambassador to the Romulans, and he wanted to help the Romulans, but their son went supernova, and he didn't save them in time.
I just don't understand why Nero's so angry. I mean, sure, but I mean, like, he's like, Spock didn't help us. Like, he was trying to.
Right.
Well, it's just so dumb.
Nero's obviously, like, he's a miner who's very, doesn't have the wide scope of things. He's only seeing what happened to him.
Yeah.
So, he blames Spock and the Federation for everything. So there's an outpost, apparently, on Delta Vega. And
a Federation outpost, I guess.
And they make their way to this outpost, and this is where they run into Scotty and his little...
imaginary friend, Keenzer.
Yeah, makes a little friend. So, and this is a weird thing, is apparently Scotty was working on a computation to beam at somebody while they're in warp.
And also to beam from planet to planet.
Right.
And inside the same solar system. He's like, oh, that's easy. But he did, experimented on Admiral Archer's prized beagle, and it got lost. And therefore he got pushed out to this planet.
It
would have been great to have a Scott Bakula cameo if he's alive. I mean, he's obviously alive since Scotty beamed his beagle.
Right.
I guess Porthos is still alive too. Porthos the Seventh.
Well, yeah, but still the idea then, they know that the Enterprise is in warp, and they know kind of where it's going. I guess they somehow can track it, where it's going. But they can beam from Delta Vega all the way...
to wherever it's going.
Which is crazy, because why do you need starships after that?
To have firepower.
Yes.
And have shuttles to do other kind of things. Transporters just kind of get you there, but you need more stuff than just you.
Why not just transport the firepower then?
I guess. I don't know. Ships are fun.
Well, anyways.
Over-reliance on this was the downfall of the Iconians. You need your ships too. Because Iconians can get anywhere they wanted. Well, there's special transporter door things.
I guess.
And they died off.
This where, like, in the same thing happened in Into Darkness, where, what's his
Khan name?
Beams to the Klingon
homeworld. Yeah.
You're like, come on.
Well, in the book, in the novelization, there's lots of stops. Yeah. It's not a direct beam.
He had some layovers.
He had to bounce around, but it was pretty quick still.
He had to go to Atlanta twice.
Yeah.
Why am I in Atlanta again?
he gets halfway to Kronos and has to go back to Atlanta, and then he gets his full flight
Andoria,
to Kronos. Yeah.
And then Atlanta, and then to Kronos.
Yeah. He can't stop at Vulcan anymore because it doesn't exist. He had to go to Delta Vega and then back.
Delta Vega, right.
Which is why he had that big coat.
That's right. Because he's so cold.
He was cold in Delta Vega for a little while.
Yeah, it was cold.
The layover in Delta Vega.
Andoria is cold, too.
Andoria is cold.
Yeah. Atlanta's very hot.
Yes.
Yeah. Take the coat off there. Put on the shorts.
and the Speedo.
And the Speedos. So they get to the Enterprise. They're beamed up there, but...
Gotta get seen into a tube.
Tube.
And they have to run around
I
and
mean,
get him out of the brewery.
Scene have to be there.
It's for comic relief, because Simon Pegg's known for being funny, so you gotta have a funny scene with Simon
Pegg.
Wasn't
that funny?
It wasn't.
It was just kind of stupid.
It was just kind of there, just frantic.
They obviously see the Chekhov.
Like, that scene didn't need to be in the movie. The scene where they explain all the stuff, that should have been in the movie.
Yeah, so Simon Pegg escapes the twirling blades of the water reclamation system.
It's probably a coolant system.
Whatever. But you know, Kirk saves them, gets them out of the tube, and then they're arrested by Cupcake.
As they run through the brewery. Because the Enterprise has a brewery on board.
That'd be great. They're making beer.
Budweiser Classic, I believe.
Budweiser Classic. They should have put it on the side of the ship via delivery.
Planet Express.
Yeah, exactly.
Fry and Leela. Zap Brannigan.
It's funny because you can totally see Spock's like, how the hell did you get on this ship again? Which is pretty much, it's hilarious in its own right, you know, that would even happen. Like I said, they're back on the ship and they get back into it, and Kirk's
emotionally compromises Spock to get him to release his command.
Yeah, so Kirk basically puts himself as a human punching bag to get Spock to attack him, and it's only till his father says, Spock, you must not do this. And he realizes that he's like, I'm emotionally compromised. I have to relieve command. And then that's when he's like, well, who's in command now? He's like, and McCoy's like, Kirk is. Pike made him a second command. He's like, you're kidding me.
Nope.
This is where Kirk's like, we're going to track down Narada. And Chekhov comes up with this plan to hide behind Titan. And so they won't scan them somehow.
Well, I mean, the Earth's moon made the Vulcan ship not be able to scan the Enterprise-E for some reason, so bad reasons.
I guess, reasons.
I mean, they do have previous canon to back that up, but it still doesn't make any sense. The moon's
gravity. But they still got to warp into the system.
Moon's gravity is going to block it.
They still have to warp into the system. Anyway, so Spock comes along and says, hey, I could help you with those Romulan technologies because, you know,
Romulans. We share common ancestry.
Like, do you? That's a long time ago.
It's not that long ago.
Long enough. Can you read Italian?
No.
Can you read Chinese?
No.
You share a common ancestry with the Chinese.
And Mongolians too, probably.
And Mongolians too, but doesn't mean you can work their computers when you go to China. You're like, I don't know what the fuck these things say. Anyways, just thought that was funny.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Anyways, so they
if I look into my blood, I can figure it out. I promise.
If I look long enough
and hard on enough,
I have worms. Anyways, so the Enterprise does make the jump to Titan. The Narada's already blowing up half of San Francisco with their drill.
And once again, the transporters and the communications are broken.
Right.
No one has a ground-to-surface torpedo or phaser or shuttlecraft with a torpedo or transporter with a torpedo.
Right.
Like, nobody's even attempting to stop this. It's got to be the Enterprise and Kirk and all of them.
Right. Kirk and Spock get aboard, and it's funny thing, Scotty says, it should be in a storage room.
If the ship has any common sense to it, you'll be in the storage room.
And they basically beamed to the bridge or something very similar to it, at least.
Well, like, the ship has no solid, like,
this
corridors.
It just makes no sense whatsoever.
It looks like the Mines of Moria from Lord of the Rings, except it's techno instead of rock.
Yeah, it's just platforms floating.
It's a mining ship. It should be a ship that's got all this, like, machinery in it. It shouldn't look like caverns to be mined.
I don't mind the exterior ship. I think it's a crazy-looking ship, but I don't mind the exterior ship because it's, like, I sort of understand, like, if you're mining, like, maybe an asteroid belt or something like that, that might be all...
A good way to pull it in or whatever.
Things in and use them.
All that hentai.
Yes, all the hentai. So, but if you pull all those things in and they could, you know, mine and process all that stuff, but the ship itself just inside looks crazy.
It makes zero sense.
Yeah.
From a standpoint of logic.
So during that firefight, they they get rid of a bunch of Romulans, and then they find Spock's little ship and
the jellyfish,
and
then they find the.
Yes, they do find the red matter. And but Spock realizes that Kirk's not telling him everything.
Yes, because Spock Sr. told him to not tell anything. It's like, oh, because the ship recognizes Spock
immediately.
Kirk's like, oh, that's weird.
Isn't that weird? He says, you're not telling me. He's like, look, I can't tell you everything, but it's all going to work out. Don't worry about it. And Spock's like, if I don't see Uhura before, you know, if I don't make
tell
it.
Her, I love her.
And he's like, don't.
Tell her I'm gay.
I'm gay for.
For bones.
But.
I want to give him more than just bones.
But Spock's like, it's going to work. Don't worry about it. It's going to work. I thought it was funny. Just that little.
Yeah. He's like, it's a good exchange. I mean, the actors are good. It's just the script is a mess.
I love the casting.
Yeah, the casting's great.
Everything in the casting is amazing. There's some. I have some qualms about Kirk sometimes and Spock, but the casting itself, very well done.
But the qualms are mostly probably from the script, though.
A lot from the script. So Spock takes off with the ship and starts blowing things up, and then he blows a hole through the ship, and then he goes down to get rid of that the drill and knocks that out. During that time, Kirk fights with Nero and the first officer, and he does get the jump on the first officer when he's choking him out. He goes, I got your gun. And he shoots him. So.
And then Nero runs away from Kirk because he hears that Spock has got the jellyfish. He's like, Spock! He's doing Khan, but Spock!
Spock draws him away from, I don't know, were they out of the solar system or were they within? I'm assuming they must have left the solar
system. I guess they left the solar system because they are dropping a black hole in the middle of the solar system. So I would assume they leave the solar system a little bit.
A little dangerous.
Because because Spock is going to use the jellyfish so they can deploy.
Oh boy. How many people have stopped listening now?
Red matter. That's the ongoing joke if you haven't figured it out yet.
So Spock decides he's going to ram his ship, the jellyfish, into the Narada. This point, the drill's not working anymore, so they can beam Spock, Pike, and Kirk up. And they beam them up. And
the Enterprise comes in and it destroys all the torpedoes just fine.
Absolutely.
Because the computer says if the torpedoes say it'll ignite the red matter.
So the jellyfish crashes into the Narada and the red matter coagulates.
I guess.
We have like a weird moment of
it,
like,
makes a black hole. It ignites all the red matter. Because before, they drop all the tiniest little droplets to make these black holes.
Right.
And they ignite all the red matter. And it just, it's not even that big of a singularity this time. It's kind of boring.
The singularity opens up, sucks the Narada into it.
Kirk asks, do you need to be beamed out? Can we help you?
Narada says, I'd rather die a million times or whatever.
And see Romulus die a million times and take help from you. I'm like, okay.
Kirk's like, fine.
See ya.
But then the Enterprise gets sucked into this singularity, and they
Scotty's like, I'm giving her all she's got, even though he's just walking down a corridor. I'm like, you're not doing anything.
You're just running through the brewery because you've been drinking the whole fucking time. You're
not even near the warp core.
Yeah, I know, right, exactly.
It's like he jettisons the impulse engine drive.
Is that? I thought it was a warp core, but...
I mean, he says it's the core, but it looks... I mean, I... Because we see what the warp core looks like in, I guess, the second movie.
Yes,
it doesn't look like the warp core. So
Scotty ejects the Enterprise multiple warp cores and detonates them near the black hole, propelling the Enterprise safely.
It
doesn't make any sense, because if you don't have the warp core, how could you have multiple warp cores?
It's not the warp core. They must have done it wrong. I think that there's the impulse drive core, because the impulse drive is based off nuclear fusion or fission to power impulse. Because
that wouldn't just blow them up from behind, though.
Because I mean, all those barrels had like a nuclear symbol on them, I think. The thing is, because
I didn't see the barrels that well, so
because the regular warp is an antimatter reaction, antimatter-matter reaction. So you can still use nuclear power to power the impulse.
I think you're just making excuses for bad writing.
I think they ejected the impulse drive, okay. Not the warp core.
I thought he said warp core, but
it didn't look like a warp core. They shot a whole bunch of little canisters.
I know. It doesn't make any sense because a warp core doesn't look like that.
Yeah, so that's why I think it's the impulse cores.
Or maybe shot the brewery. The brewery
exploding. Out. Yeah, it was the brewery they
shot out.
There
goes the Budweiser!
I mean, it was the brewery canisters they shot out because they came out of the neck and not the secondary hull.
The most super ship in the whole galaxy.
That's another reason why I think it's the impulse core, because they came out underneath the impulse deck and not out of the secondary.
So, back on Earth, Spock meets his older counterpart, and he kind of tells young, he first thinks it's his dad, and he's like, you know.
Nope, I'm me, I'm you. Yeah,
and he basically says, you know, you should stay on the Enterprise, you should, you know, follow your heart.
Old Spock's like, I'm going to fuck all the young Vulcans, and you don't have to, because our DNA is the same. Giggity goo. I'm going to ponfart all the light long.
Ponfart all the... Then, so we have a cool scene between Old Spock and New Spock, and next we have Kirk is made captain of the Enterprise.
Officially.
And he relieves Pike. And then we have the very last scene. We have the... on the bridge and they taking off into space.
And we presumed this was the 5-year mission, but the 5-year mission doesn't start to like the end to like the end of the second movie, which right. is kind of weird.
Well, and that wraps up the movie. Dave, J.J. Abrams reboot, did a lot for, bringing life back into this franchise.
It did an admirable job. It got Star Trek back on the radar. It got new people into Star Trek, which I am thankful for. And, you know, I don't, anything negative I say about this movie that I've been saying about this movie so far isn't because, oh, I hate J.J. Abrams or I hate the Kelvin films. Like, I think they're fine. They're fine pieces of entertainment. And I spoke more highly of them before in the past because they are decent films. But just because they're decent films doesn't mean they don't have problems. And this movie has so many plot holes, as I've been trying to point out along as we go.
Yeah.
It's just rewatching this movie with a critical eye, because before we've never talked about it on the show before, so I've only watched it, you know, as like as a fan, you know. Oh, it was fine. It wasn't sure. great. It wasn't terrible.
Sure.
It was fun. It was action packed. It was enjoyable.
Right.
Switch your brain off and enjoy. But you know, now that I've got my brain engaged and I'm watching these things, I'm like, this stuff doesn't make sense. We're no, there's no reason that Amanda would have died. She would have been clutching onto him until he got on the Enterprise and probably still would have been holding onto him.
Still the guy, the transporting or whoever it was, if it was Chekhov, or should have been able to beam.
But I guess they were establishing the fact that it's hard to beam someone when they're moving, which never has been an issue before in Star Trek. I just don't understand.
Yeah.
It's just weird. But they're making it a thing. The drill being the center of the what's causing the blockage of transporters and communications makes no sense.
Yeah,
and it hurts my
head.
No
planetary defenses.
No planetary. And I understand they said they got Spock. They were trying to pry the information from Sarek. But still, like, even if they dumped the planetary attention, can't Starfleet come up with some kind of plan B?
Right.
Like, beam the torpedoes?
Beam the torpedoes, yeah.
You know, planetary, like, you know, like, a setup of, like pull an old gun, an old phaser bank that's not being used, like, out of storage and just aim it up there and shoot it manually. Like, something. Like, you're just sitting there, like, oh, I guess we're just going to watch this happen. It's like fireworks. They're just, like, blinded by the fact that anything bad can happen.
There are a lot of plot holes in this movie. I mean, little ones and kind of big ones here and there.
I mean, like, it's fine. It's a decent enough movie, but it's got lots of issues. Like the neither planet had planetary defenses. Like, red matter, what is it? Why is it? They never really explained red matter.
Just say red matter. You should take on a faith that it can do some weird, you know, make a black hole.
It's a plot device.
Yeah.
The fact that they left out all the information about Rua Pente and
yeah.
It's just barely mentioned in passing. It's the movie's got plot holes, and it just speeds along just for plot convenience. Like, Spock should have gotten a court martial for kicking the second command off for not really doing anything wrong.
Yeah.
I mean, he hit a couple red shirts, but I mean, you know, red shirts.
It always does seem, no matter what in Star Trek, if, as long as they save the day in the end, they kind of like, whatever, dude, you're all right.
But it doesn't even come up. And then when McCoy comes to him and talks about, like, should you have done that? And then Spock is talking like he did it for his good, like, because he makes some kind of horse analogy. And Spock is like, well, even a prize stallion needs to be broken first. So, like, what? You're like, you're grooming him?
Yeah.
To be better than he is? Like, I just.
Yeah.
Like, he didn't think that. He was just trying to get him off the ship. And now he's, like, trying to make it like he's like, oh, I'm trying to make him better. Like, it just doesn't. Nothing makes sense. Like, so much. It just becomes plot convenience for plot convenience. And, you know, Nemesis and especially Insurrection are huge on that, where, like, stuff happens because plot has to happen because right. The movie has to happen.
Right.
But none of it makes any sense. It just has to happen so that things can move forward.
Right.
When it makes no logical sense in the scheme of how Starfleet works or how the Enterprise works or why Data would be on a first contact mission anyway when
right.
he's botched all the first contact missions he's ever been on in the series. It
sure.
doesn't make any sense.
Sure.
So lots of logic gaps in this movie, and, you know, they did a fine job explaining that it was at a different universe and things don't have to follow, and that's fine. I enjoyed it for what it was, but now that we're doing the podcast on it, I'm being more critical on it as a movie. I'm not dumping on it because it's JJ. I'm just being critical for the plot holes that don't make any sense. I'm not a hater of the Kelvin universe, and I think Beyond is probably the best of the three films. Beyond was great. I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. What about you?
I think one of the saving things about this whole movie is the casting is brilliant. Everybody in this is so well done. I mean, from Zachary Quinto to Pine, everybody's great. You know, Carl Urban. You know, they just
love Carl Urban.
The guy who plays Pike. I know
Christopher Green.
He's, I mean, he doesn't totally remind you of Pike, but you're like, yeah, I could see him. You know, it's a decent version. And I like that they brought Pike into it at that point. So there's a lot I really do like about that. I like, I can't remember where I heard it, but it basically Pine was worried that he didn't want to do Shatner. He didn't want to do an impression of Shatner.
Mm-hmm.
And he had to do it his own way. And I respect that. I don't think you could do Shatner.
Which is weird, because everyone else is doing an impersonation.
Because
Carl Urban's doing a really great DeForest Kelly impersonation.
He is. But Carl-
and Anton Yelchin is doing a great Walter Koenig being right, and even doing a better job than Walter Koenig did with the Russian stuff.
He did. And the only one probably was Sulu. Wasn't really doing much of a
decay.
Yeah, he just kind
of... Also, Uhura wasn't doing Nichelle Nichols.
No, but Nichelle never did have anything like...
Didn't have any strong personality traits.
She was there just, and, you know... So,
I mean, she's a strong woman, but I mean, other than being woman, there was nothing.
There's nothing you could say point to
distinguish it.
Like Simon Pegg is being a Scotsman, you know, obviously.
Yeah,
you know.
He's even laying it on thicker than James Doohan did, because James Doohan wasn't like he just knew how to do a Scottish accent, but like,
yeah, he's Canadian, isn't he?
Yeah, but Simon Pegg is actually from the UK, so he's got the different dialects down. So he's doing a more legit Scottish accent, which is kind of fun.
I get that. Obviously, Kirk is different. He doesn't have his father to help him, to guide him through life. We got a little younger Kirk as well, so he's a little more wild. We don't have the tempered Kirk that we see in the original series and into the movies. So
and we never get the tactician Kirk. I would love to see them do like Balance of Terror on a larger scale in the movies.
We've never seen Tactician Kirk at any point through all these last movies. I mean, with Into Darkness, we just see him.
He's just like he's so much of a hothead.
He reacts
in the movies,
and he doesn't think before he leaps. And I know that was one of Pike's things, but you know, there also has to be a time when you leap and a time when you say, like, well, let's think about this for a moment. You know, so.
And it's even beyond. It's still very much reactionary.
Exactly. So casting really well done. As all the stated points that we've said, the script moves along and it keeps the story going. I don't have any problem with any of that. It just there are just glaring issues when you stop and think for a minute. And then lastly, as you know me, it does not evoke the true spirit of Star Trek in my mind. It doesn't make you go like, oh, wow, I'm walking away with a different perspective.
There's no message.
There's no message.
It's action schlock.
And I gave this movie a pass when it came out, and I still do, just because they had to start somewhere. You had to kind of retell the story. You had to tell it to a younger group of people that never
seen it. And it also came at a time where origin films are – and the origin films are still big. You know, you just got Black Panther like 6-7 months ago. You know, like – I mean all these – and we're getting Captain Marvel like what, in March?
Yeah.
So these are going to be origin stories. We're still getting origin stories. And Star Trek in the Dark – I mean Star Trek 2009 came out during the time where origin movies were kind of just kind of starting.
Right. No, and but my point only being you kind of had to, because there was it, like guys like us, sure, we're embedded. They knew we were going to show up, but they wanted to get those young kids to start watching, to
new
start,
audience,
and start knowing who this crew was and what the Star Trek franchise is. I don't think it really did anything for the franchise. I think other than just giving a boost in the arm, I don't think the people that go and see it like a young kid, I don't think they're inspired like we were inspired when we got hooked into Star Trek. I think they're...
Or at least not in the same way.
Not in the same way. And that's the issue. That's really the crux of where I walk away from it and go like, it's fun. It's funny. And it looks beautiful. It just doesn't have any message, doesn't have any afterthought to it, doesn't have any thing to make you go like, wow, that's... there's no layers to it. Like, I mean, there's...
What you see is what you get.
You know, like, I always bring up Wrath of Khan. I see multiple layers in that movie, even as I get older. Mm-hmm. You know, as I see do things I never would have saw before as a kid. You know, so...
There's more nuance to it.
So much more nuance. And I don't... Maybe it's just the... And I notice this all...
It's also modern filmmaking, too.
Yes. There's no nuance in anything anymore. Nobody... Like, just nobody gives the audience the benefit of the doubt that, hey, you know...
We can think on our own.
We can think on our own, and we can also... You don't have to be over the top with things. Mm-hmm. You can give an understated performance, and it
leave it for interpretation.
Yes!
I mean, even like with Event Horizon, like, as much as I know you weren't a super big fan of it, but that movie is more nuanced, absolutely, way more nuanced than this movie.
And that's saying a lot. I mean, there's lots of things to say about it, but I don't hate this movie. I do enjoy this movie. Into Darkness, I have a lot of problems with. I like the first half of Into Darkness, and I think it falls apart in the last half. But I still – there's parts I enjoy. I still enjoy the cast and crew. I thought Star Trek Beyond was a very fun movie. I think it went out on a limb and made a lot of – it's not a perfect movie, but I think they did
– It's pretty, by far the best of the three Kelvin films.
But I think this 2009 was exactly what this franchise needed, and I think it woke everybody up to say, whoa, Star Trek, I forgot about that. You know, because I think it had been away for a good amount of time. So
yeah, it had gone away for a while. And Star Trek is great. It's a good film. It's not an amazing film. It's not a perfect film, but I enjoy it for what it is. And as critical as I'm being on it tonight, I still enjoyed it. It's a fun watch. It is a fun movie to watch.
And if I was to have a friend that said I've never watched Star Trek before, I probably would pop this in. Unless I knew they were a different person. I wouldn't give them, obviously, motion picture.
No.
I wouldn't give them...
Nemesis.
I wouldn't give them Insurrection. Nemesis.
Star Trek Live.
I wouldn't give them Wrath of Khan, because I think it'd be kind of lost on them. I wouldn't give them...
Well, I actually started Bob Yetto on Wrath of Khan.
Did you?
Yeah, I started him. I made him watch 2, 3, and 4, and then I made him watch 6. And then he fell in love with the characters. And he's like, can I watch 1 and 5? And I'm like, yes, you can, since you like the characters. Mm-hmm. But I didn't show these to you because they're inferior films.
All right.
And they're inferior stories. They're not going to make you want to watch more. And he watched them, and he's like, yeah, these weren't as good as the other four.
Obviously, First Contact is a really great film. But I think this movie would be a good access point to somebody who's never seen it.
It is a good access point, and it was designed to bring in new fans. But the other side of the coin is that it fractured the fan base, because apparently the diehard fans don't understand or don't care or don't think that And I'm not saying all the old fans, because I mean, we're old fans, and we enjoyed this movie for what it is. Right. But the people that got upset by it, they just can't accept that Star Trek has two timelines now. And I'm like, it's different. And I'm like, that's the best thing about it.
Yeah.
Is it's got its own timeline. It can be as different as it wants. And that's where it fails, because Star Trek Into Darkness, they just try to do Wrath of Khan. And instead of doing something new, right, with the unlimited playground they had by establishing a new universe, they just went to old.
That's why I like Beyond, because they kind of reimagine. And you have the NX. I think that's what was the NX in Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah, it's NX-326.
Yeah, the NX-326, the Franklin. Yeah, I like that they went and they did something different for that. You know, that was a fun. It was a fun exercise. Obviously, it did not do well in the box office, and a lot of people had, one reason or other, didn't think it was that great.
Well, I blame that squarely on Paramount, because I feel like there was a trailer that came out 6 months before the movie, and everyone hated it because it looked too much like a Fast and the Furious movie, because Justin Lin was directing it, people were making fun of it. And then they didn't come out with a second trailer until like a week before the movie came out.
Yeah.
So they had like no marketing for this. It was terribly done. Like, they did not market this movie well at all, the third one.
There was a lot of issues with it, for sure. I don't know. And obviously there's a lot of question about the just about the franchise itself for the movies, if they're going to continue.
It seems really up in the air, but there is a rumor that Megan Fox is being considered for a role in Star Trek 4.
Right.
Because she was like with John Cho, and they tweeted hashtag Star Trek or something. So people on Facebook are flipping out about that too.
You know what? I just think the fans are.
Do you want us to not watch this movie because Megan Fox is in it? I'm like,
I think fans are always going to shit on it on one way or the other. And look, I get some of the complaints. I'm not saying that some of those things aren't valid. Obviously, we've brought up multiple points of reason why this movie's in. Some of these things don't stand up for Star Trek, at least.
Yeah, I'm not trying to like judge it. I'm not trying to judge it as a bad Star Trek. I'm just trying to judge it where it falls apart from just a storytelling narrative standpoint.
And that's the problem. One of the problems, like I've said before, I'm worried about the future of Star Trek. With you have Alex Kurtzman, and it seems like a lot of these people who are writing for Discovery, and who knows what other ones they're writing for, I don't think they really have a good idea.
Any idea what's going on.
What Star Trek is.
And that's scary. And rewatching this movie scared me. And I was defending Alex Kurtzman the other day on Facebook, because people are upset that Alex Kurtzman, because someone responded to my post, like I put up months ago, about Alex Kurtzman's 5-year mission. Mm-hmm. I shared that on Facebook in one of the Star Trek groups, and some lady was responding to me on it. And I was, you know, most of the people hate Into Darkness the most. You like Into Darkness the least out of the three.
Right.
And, you know, I squarely blame the issues of that script on Damon Lindelof, because he'd ruined the end of Lost. He ruined all of Prometheus. Mm-hmm. He ruined whatever else. What else did he work on that I hated? That it just like when he got involved with it, he just kind of ruined it. So I mean, he's been involved with things that have just nose bombed because he wanted to be so different, and like it just was or contrary to how things should have gone. Like, he ruined Prometheus.
Yeah.
From all accounts, from what I've read, and it took them forever to put out the next movie because they didn't know what to do, because the way he deadened the story.
Right.
So I blame. Just personally, I hope most blame's on him. So I was trying to defend
Kurtzman.
You know, Kurtzman a little bit. Right. But now that I've rewatched this movie and it was just Kurtzman and Orci, I'm just really worried that Kurtzman's the one who's in charge of Star Trek.
And Orci was the fan.
Kurtzman was
like
just his writing partner.
I know about Star Trek. I don't know, man. I hope things get better.
I mean, I hope he has some inner circle that are big Star Trek fans that could help him if he needs help. I just don't know exactly what I don't trust him.
Yeah.
I mean, I do trust him more than Harberts and Berg, who were let go because they were following Brian Fuller's mandate. And Brian Fuller should have been the safe one, but Brian Fuller was not safe.
Right.
He wanted Brene cells and bald Klingons, and he wanted to leave his own mark on Star Trek that has nothing to do with Star Trek and change it for the sake of change instead of changing it for any good story reason.
Yeah.
So, like, I don't like Like, if you're going to change things, fine, change them, but have a reason. And they talked about reasons, and I know they changed the Klingons several times, but I mean, like, changing them again, like, why do Klingons have to be changed every single time there's a new Star Trek? Just leave them be.
I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. I don't like that they just change things just and not give any. And it's a, you know, obviously a prequel to the rest of the story that they don't describe.
Although I do give JJ a huge props in this movie for making the Romulans look like Vulcans. Yes. And not have the stupid frown forehead ridge that they had next gen. Because these are technically next gen Romulans, because this is when Spock is old. So these have been Romulans on Romulus. And I like how he retconned out the stupid perma frown on Romulans, because it never made sense. Like, Spock wouldn't have fit in. He would have been pointing out like a sore thumb if he didn't have the ridges. But I just feel like they only did that for us so we could tell the difference maybe if they were Romulan.
Maybe they're half Reman.
Some of them slip with Remans.
Dental work. I don't know. So
Ron Perlman, everybody.
So anyways, this movie, I think it's good for a lot of things. I think it
has some brilliant scenes.
I think it shot Star Trek with some adrenaline that the franchise needed, but it hasn't really lived up to itself afterward. I mean, Beyond, I thought, was a fun movie. I think it didn't reach people the way it should have.
But I think that was poor marketing. I don't think it was anything. There's nothing wrong with the film, but maybe people were just so turned off by Into Darkness, too. But I just feel like they didn't do a good marketing push for Beyond. I feel like... Because Into Darkness, they had an app that came out like 6 months before the movie. They were like, had like games or something on it, puzzles or something. And mm-hmm. you get like, with the app, you get like early tickets to see the movie. Because we got to see the movie 2 days early. Mm-hmm. We saw it like on a Tuesday or Wednesday night because they open things on Thursdays now. Mm-hmm. So we got to see the movie early.
Yeah.
With a ticket. And we got to do that beyond the empty parking lot.
Yeah, the effect.
But it was, yeah, something like that. So we got to, they had this push for Into Darkness, and we got to see that early.
Right.
And nothing for this. So it's just, there's too little, too late. It was just kind of dumb.
I don't know. Here's to hoping, you know, that they make a Star Trek 4 and it's not hot garbage, and that Discovery and...
Megan Fox is easy on the eyes. I don't mind Megan Fox being in the movie.
I know you don't. It's not even about Megan Fox. It's like, is it going to be worthwhile? You know, I don't.
But people are complaining that Megan Fox is in it because they think she's a bad actress or whatever. I'm just like, yeah, maybe she just hasn't been given good scripts like Transformers, like Ninja Turtles. Like, she hasn't been given much to work with.
Yeah.
These aren't exactly like Oscar-winning movies.
Yeah, she's, you know, she's just a good-looking person. That's all it comes down to.
There's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that. Don't beauty shame people. Anything else we want to put out for this movie? I don't think there's a lot to say. I think we've said most during it. I just think we're in the same boat one way or the other that we're like...
I'm a little bit more worried for Star Trek now with Alex Kurtzman. I was worried before because I didn't fully trust him.
And then you watch this.
After rewatching this movie, I'm just like, I'm more worried about Alex Kurtzman being in charge of Star Trek.
Shit. It was all there. I was just caught in the hype at the moment.
Yeah, and then, like I said, like, the Enterprise is just so ugly, especially, like, I didn't mind the Enterprise at first in the J.J. movie. I was like, oh, it's a nice reimagining, it's nice, it's kind of weird, but the nacelles are kind of big, but, you know, it's not bad. And, like, if they would have just sized down the nacelles and made them more proportionate to the rest of the ship, I think it would have been great, because I like how sleek the rest of the ship looks. I like the neck, how it swoops.
Everything else looks pretty good, just the nacelles are just damn big.
And then after seeing the Discovery Enterprise reimagined, it's perfect. It's what a reimagined Enterprise should look like.
Yeah,
I think so. Right. I don't know. Well,
we hope things turn out.
Yeah, we're looking forward to Star Trek IV and Discovery Season 2, and we'll be reporting on them as soon as we see them.
Big nacelles or not.
Big nacelles or not, indeed. Well, our intro is provided by Dave Wilkes. The rest of our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. The show you can find online at syntholics.com. Shoot us an email at syntholics@yahoo.com. Remember, we're doing
the
200 episodes, so we want your crazy Star Trek theories. However crazy they are, you send them an email or send us an audio file. Either one will work.
Absolutely, it'd be fun.
You can find us on Twitter at syntholicduo. Personally, I'm at David_J_Duncan, Aaron's at Blackbird2004, and Holly's at Lunar Thistle.
Please go to Apple iTunes, rate and review us there. That's preferable to get us noticed by the Apple machinery so more people can find the show. also, if you could go to our Patreon/Synthaholics, drop us maybe a buck a month. It's not a lot to ask to help keep the podcast going. And also, as always, tell somebody about us. Tell us that we're trapped in this room. We can't get out. We have to continually podcast till somebody unlocks this room. We don't know where the door is. There's no window.
It's an escape room without any clues.
We just find crackers in the corner every once in a while.
When we wake up, there's a cracker there. I'm like, oh, it's a cracker.
There's a bucket here for us to use, but tell people we need to get out.
And Harry Mudd keeps stealing our cracker with his little lobster.
Lobster. Rock lobster.
It's a rock lobster made of red matter.
Yeah, so word of mouth is a wonderful way to share the show.
Well, thank you all so much for listening. Live long and prosper, one and all.
Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink, and we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
So many red matters.
That's funny.
I hope it comes out funny.